You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
Moving On is broadcast on KBOO every Friday right after the noon news to 1:30. On Friday, February 25th, Moving On will present part two of a celebration of Black History Month. We'll hear music from the Civil Rights Movement, as well as from contemporary folk performers Laura Love, Rhiannon Giddens, Reggie Harris, and more. Tune in Friday, February 25th, right after the noon news to celebrate Black History Month, only on KBOO.
Today on Wings.
Love. Oh, let's say it again. Love. And we just love to say that word, don't we? We just love this song, and we just love this music, and we just love those burritos, and we just love this book, and we just love that movie, and we love you.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. Playwright and performance artist Carolyn Gage delivers one of her famous sermons for a lesbian tent revival. This one can be useful for everyone. It's titled, The Real L Words.
Welcome, sisters. Welcome to the Lesbian Tent Revival Radio Hour. Now, today we're going to talk about the L words, the real L words, and one of them is not lesbian. No, sisters, we're going to talk about two L words today, two L words, and one of them you may never have heard of at all, and the other one I bet you've heard way too much of. And there's a reason for this. There's a connection between why you have never heard of one and why you have heard too much of the other. A connection. And a connection in the brain is another word for what? That's right, sisters, for synapse. So listen up now. Synapse with me today, and you may save yourself a lot of money on those U-Haul rentals. Words. Words are important. Now, I'm talking to you with what? With words. And you're doing what when I talk? You are synapsing because words make you think. When you hear a word, you think about it. Remember, when neurons fire together, they wire together. That's how we learn to read. Point to the picture, read the word, right? There's a little spark somewhere in the brain, a little neuron that fires when it hears its name. But what if there's no name for something? Then how's that little neuron going to spark? How are you going to think about something if you don't have a word for it? Yes, ma'am, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about mind control, words. And in the patriarchy, there are some things they want us to think about all the time, but not very clearly. And that's the first L word we're going to talk about. And then there's other things they don't want us to think about at all, so they try not to have a word for it, and that's going to be the second L word. Are you with me? And I want to give you two examples of how this works. The patriarchy loves words about romance and sex because those words get women to interact with the devil. So everybody knows the word date, everybody knows the word sexual, and those words are just fine and dandy because you still don't hear too much about lesbians. Okay, now before the 1970s, people weren't putting the word date together with rape. And they didn't put the word sexual together with harassment. You didn't hear those terms or read about them. Does this mean they weren't happening to women and hadn't been happening and happening a lot to women for about 200,000 years? No. Well, then why were there no terms for it? Because our enemy did not want us to have a name for what they were doing to us. Because if we couldn't name it, we couldn't frame it. And if we couldn't frame it, we couldn't get laws passed to protect ourselves. And that meant they could go on doing it to us as much as they wanted. So because dates are supposed to be voluntary, there couldn't be such a thing as date rape. She must have given mixed messages, or maybe she just changed her mind later. Probably she was jealous. And because sexual is supposed to refer to something pleasant and exciting, there couldn't possibly be sexual harassment. It was just a case of teasing a woman who had no sense of humor. Well, sisters, why did it take 200,000 years to name date rape and sexual harassment? Because it takes power to name things. And women have been slow, sisters, mighty slow to take that power. But in the 1960s, we had a movement. I mean, we were moving, and we were moving together, and we were moving stuff that was in our way, and that's a good thing. And we need another movement pretty damn bad. That's why we're at this Lesbian Tent Revival, sisters, to get moving again. But we did have a movement, and that movement had power, and we named ourselves, and we said we were sisters, and we were lesbians, and we named the patriarchy, and we found our clits, and we figured out that men were never going to find them, and we started doing it for ourselves. Yes, we did. Sisters doing it for ourselves. And sisters, date rape and sexual harassment are crimes today. They are crimes. You can put a date rapist in jail. Takes some work, but it can be done. You can get paid millions of dollars in damages from big corporations for sexual harassment. Why? Because we learned how to synapse. So, all right, let's talk about these L words. And that first one is the one you hear way too much of. Anybody here have an idea what that word is? Somebody say love, because if she did, she's right. First L word is love, so let's all say it. Love. Oh, let's say it again. Love. And we just love to say that word, don't we? We just love this song, and we just love this music, and we just love those burritos, and we just love this book, and we just love that movie, and we love you. Oh, my goddess, do we love you. We love the way you smile. We love the way you smell. We love, love, love the way you touch us. And we love, and we love, and we love, and we love, and we love. And sisters, I'm getting worn out. I'm getting worn out because love is a tired word. It is overworked. It's a word expected to do too many things. It's a word that's supposed to be in too many places at once. Now, what happens to people when we have too many things to do and too many places to be? We end up not doing anything very well and hardly ever being where we should be. And that's exactly what is happening to our love today. Now, I'm going to tell you about Sister Suzette Hayden Elgin. Sister Suzette Hayden Elgin, E-L-G-I-N. She's a mighty sister of the sacred synapse. Sister Suzette understood words. She understood the power of words. She wrote a book called The Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense, which is a powerful weapon for women, all about how our enemy uses language against us. The Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense. And she wrote another book, a science fiction book called Native Tongue. And in Native Tongue, Sister Suzette writes about a community of women in the future who have invented their own language called Layadin. Layadin. And Layadin is a language all about synapsing, correctly. So today, sisters, we're going to have ourselves a little lesson in Layadin. Yes, we are right here. I'm going to read you a list of words in Layadin and what they mean. And I want you to be thinking about someone in your life that you would say you love. Could be anybody, a child, an ex-lover, someone you just met, your partner, that's right. You got somebody in mind? Good, because here we go. These are 11 words in Layadin, and they all mean love in our language. Okay. Aya, mysterious love, not yet known to be welcome or unwelcome. Aaj, love for one sexually desired at one time, but not now. Ab, love for one liked, but not respected. Ad, love for one respected, but not liked. Am, love for one related by blood. Ashan, love for one not related by blood, but kin of the heart. Aya, love that is unwelcome and a burden. Aj, love for one sexually desired now. Iimi, love for one neither liked nor respected. Oham, love for that which is holy. Sham, love for the child of one's body, presupposing neither liking nor respect nor their absence. And I'm going to add two more. These are Sister Carolyn's, not Sister Suzette's. Oh no. Now, that's love for someone you slept with before you took the time to know them or let them know you. And uh-oh, that's love for someone who's already in a relationship. Now, you really had to synapse listening to that, didn't you? You had to go deep. Couldn't just skate by with, I love you. You had to be synapsing with the heart, with the clit, with your history, with your head. That's right. If you're talking about love in Layadin, you have to be fully present. And because you had to use language that made you think deeply, you probably had to draw a conclusion. Like, this is a good idea, or this is a really bad idea. And once you've drawn a conclusion, you may just have to take action. Now, I wonder why the English language is so vague about the word that's going to describe our most intense emotional relationships. We have more vocabulary, my sisters, for real estate transactions than we do for intimate ones. Now, why is that? Because the patriarchy wants people to know exactly what they're getting when they enter into a real estate transaction. Uh-huh. It does not want people, especially women, to know what we're getting into when we fall in love. Well, why not? Because historically, heteropatriarchal relationships have handed women the short end of the stick, so to speak. We all know the statistics about how married men live longer than single men, but single women live longer than married ones. We know that historically, marriage has been a property boondoggle, which gets back to why there's such specific words for real estate and not specific words for love. When a word is vague, sisters, our thinking is vague. And when our thinking is vague, we don't make clear decisions. And we especially don't make clear decisions to protect ourselves and our enemy. And who's our enemy? That's right. He does not want us to know how to protect ourselves. And the same thing is going on with sex. Having sex? What does that mean? You feel like having sex tonight? What does that mean, sisters? Because sex can be, get ready for it, strap yourself in. The word sex can be a treat, a comfort, a gift, an enhancement, a bonding activity, a spiritual experience, a reward, a revelation, a pleasure, an exploration, an adventure, a recreational activity, a payoff, a bribe, a diversion, an annoyance, a performance, a duty, a chore, an obsession, a compulsion, an addiction, a habit, a distraction, an appeasement, a trauma, an invasion, a violation, a punishment, an ordeal, a nightmare. Sex means all those things. So here's some dialogue. Honey, I feel like I could use a distraction tonight. How about you? Well, it's kind of a chore, but I can probably come up with a performance. Okay. See? Using the words. Precision, sisters, is difficult to brainwash and manipulate women who are insisting on linguistic precision. And you remember we talked about the clit, our little tip of the iceberg, don't you? Well, that clit demands precision, and our brain should be just as picky. And you all remember what a sin is in the Sisterhood of the Sacred Synapse. A sin, S-I-N, it is a synaptically inadequate network, S-I-N. Synaptically inadequate network. We're all sinners, sisters. We all have synaptically inadequate networks, torn webs, malformed webs. Why? Because we are fed lies 24/7 by the patriarchy, because we're having to use a language we did not develop. But we can save ourselves and we can save each other. And how can we do that? We do that by sparking the gap, by synapsing, by making the right connections. And we are just crackling today. So that's the first L word, love. And we need to learn to break it down. We need to think critically about it, because it's a one-size-fits-all word, which means it doesn't fit anybody. We all deserve a custom fit. Yes, we do. So what about that second word? And don't even try to guess it, because I know half y'all never heard of it, and the rest of you never think about it. But before we talk about it, I have to tell you, you might want to brace yourselves. Put on your seatbelts, because this word's going to make us shift paradigms. Now, a paradigm is nothing but a model for synapse, and that's all it is. It's a model, a map. And when you shift paradigms, you have to shift the way a whole lot of your synapses work. It's like the way folks used to think the sun circled around the earth. Well, of course they thought that. Why wouldn't they? Couldn't they stick their head out the window in the morning and see it coming up over the horizon? And couldn't they look up during the day and see it traveling across the sky? And then at night, couldn't they see it disappearing down the other side of the horizon? But then Galileo told him it was actually the earth that was circling around the sun, and that blew people's minds. And it wasn't just about astronomy either. It meant that we weren't the center of the universe anymore. It meant the universe did not revolve around us anymore. For a lot of people, that wrecked their relationship to a higher power. So the Inquisition arrested Galileo and forced him to admit that he was wrong. Because if the sun didn't revolve around the earth, maybe folks might start wondering if they should be circling around the Pope. Paradigm shifts can be very uncomfortable, so buckle up, because this is a paradigm shift, and it's in an area where we don't necessarily want to look too hard. All right, so here we go. What is that second word? It's limerence. That's right, limerence. What's that second word? That's right, limerence. And limerence is a name for a chemical high in the brain that you get when you're infatuated or falling in love. Limerence describes a chemical high. Yeah, let's say that together. A chemical high. Limerence refers to an altered state. Now, what is an altered state? It's a state where the brain chemistry has been changed, either temporarily or permanently. And what happens when the brain chemistry changes? Sisters, we synapse differently. We don't think the same way we normally would. We don't perceive reality the same way. We do not process information the way we do when we are not in an altered state. Time may move differently. Our personalities may change. Things that used to seem important may seem trivial or ridiculous. Things we never cared about or never noticed may suddenly seem fascinating or earth-shaking. And sisters, we make strange decisions under the influence of limerence. But something has to trigger the limerence. What is it? It's that magical click when your hands accidentally touch or your eyes meet across a crowded room. But that magic is not really all that magical. And when you say, "Oh, it feels like I've known you all my life," feels like magic. Well, that feeling you've known them all your life, there's more truth to that than you know. Because here's the deal. Nature abhors a vacuum. And when there's unfinished business in our lives, our minds are always looking for closure. Our subconscious mind, sisters, is primed to look for someone who we think, important, we think, is going to give us back something we lost when we were children. And maybe we were well-behaved little girls and we have just met the daredevil who's going to walk us on the wild side. Or maybe we grew up poor, uncared for, and we just met a generous, caregiving woman who's going to be our new mommy. Or maybe we never felt like anybody needed us, and we found a woman who's such a train wreck, it's a wonder she can even tie her shoes. And maybe, and this one is a sorry truth, sisters, maybe we grew up in fear, in terror, and we have found someone we are scared of, but we're sure that this time we can win them over, prove ourselves, who knows what. Here's a new term for you, eroticizing anxiety. Yeah, and there's a strange couple, eroticizing anxiety. Build a synapse there, sisters, build a synapse. There are more women who do that than you might believe, confusing intensity for intimacy. Maybe even your girlfriend, maybe you. I'm gonna say it again, especially if you grew up with an active addict in the family, confusing intensity for intimacy. Eroticizing pity, eroticizing gratitude, eroticizing anxiety. These are not words used to describe a healthy, mutual, reciprocal, companionate relationship. These are words to describe an unequal, exploitive, abusive relationship. Now here's a concept, here's an antidote, eroticizing respect. That's another strange pairing. Respect is sexy, sisters. Learn that. Wire that together. Eroticizing respect. Neurons that fire together, wire together. Anyway, how do you get the romance and anxiety synapses to fire together and wire together? Well, think about patriarchal fairy tales, Beauty and the Beast, Phantom of the Opera. If he's scary or subhuman, but he needs you, oh my God, it's so romantic. Here's another one. Make inequality sexy. That's what pornography does. And because human nature seeks closure about inequality, pornography always has a ready market. But these are false closures, sisters. These are traps. They generate compulsions, compulsive relationships, and compulsive sexuality because they don't offer real resolution or real satisfaction. They don't really scratch the itch of our unresolved issues. So there's that magic click, that glance, that little thrill of danger. Whatever it is, something sets us off and our brain starts to produce a cocktail of drugs. And it produces three of them. Dopamine, norepinephrine, and one called beta-phenylethylamine. And what do these chemicals do in the brain? Well, they do a lot of things. They speed up the synapsing like amphetamines or cocaine. They get the adrenaline going and the heart racing. They keep you from sleeping. They keep you from eating. They keep you from focusing on anything except the object of your attraction. They give you energy. They give you confidence and they elevate your mood. They make you feel good. Really, really good. Maybe even Superman, Superwoman. Here's something else interesting they do in the brain. The levels of serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter, synapse sisters, it gets low. exactly as low as it is in the brains of people who have obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, isn't that interesting? Because some of us, when we fall in love, obsess on the other person and become sexually compulsive. Isn't that interesting? Well, you could almost say that falling in love is a form of chemically induced mental illness. Now, the scientists are not saying that exactly, but they are saying that this chemical cocktail of dopamine, norepinephrine, and betaphenylethylamine is addictive. It overstimulates the neurons, too much synapsin, and the poor little neuron can't deal with it, so it shuts down a bunch of receptor sites. That's fine as long as you stay high, but as soon as the brain stops producing these chemicals, there's trouble because the neurons can't open up the receptor sites that easily. So now there's a huge amount of understimulation, and that feels like hell psychologically and physically. That understimulation of the neurons is called withdrawal, and it makes people try just about anything they can think of to get more of that drug. Why, they may start telephoning their girlfriend 6 times a day, or they start writing 10-page letters, leaving little notes everywhere. They may write dozens of poems or love songs. They might start stalking. They might do things that are violent. Maybe they cruise the personals. Maybe they go to the bars. Maybe they try to find another way to get high. Or maybe they go cold turkey. But what I'm saying, sisters, is that limerence is a chemical high, and the primary relationship you are having is with the chemicals in your brain, not the other person. Which is kind of like saying the earth goes around the sun. But it does. And there's more, and I know y'all don't want to hear it, but it's true. Every time we have sex, our brains produce another drug called oxytocin, which makes us bond with our sex partner. Even if we just met them, we're both drunk, they've got a wife and kids back home, and they live on another continent. If we had sex with them, we're going to have that oxytocin in our brains, and we're going to feel that we have a cosmic, karmic bond, that we have met our soulmate. That is really unfair, but that is what happens. And why is that? It's because we're animals. You know, because our brain is really wired not to serve our individual lives, but to preserve the gene pool. So here's another thing I know you don't want to hear, but it's still true. There's another chemical, vasopressin, that keeps us in long-term relationships. How? It suppresses the pathways for dopamine and norepinephrine, the chemicals of limerence. In other words, passion fades as attachment grows. So you might want to think about that the next time you consider shelling out big bucks for a therapist who says she can help you put the passion back in your long-term relationship. In fact, therapists will often counsel you to pretend you've never met, pretend you're different people, go to a motel or a bar, and so on, because according to the brain chemistry, you can't have your monogamous cake and eat it, if you know what I'm saying. Why do our brains do this to us? Why do they make us fall in love with idiots and cheat on our beloved partners? Because, sisters, we are animals. Yes, we are. We're animals, and animals are hardwired for survival of the gene pool. We're hardwired to mate and reproduce. And this chemically induced high is an incentive for us to do that. And guess what? Limerence is going to last about 2 years, which is just about long enough for a woman to mate, get pregnant, have the baby, and wean it. It's just about long enough to ensure the survival of both mother and infant when they are the most vulnerable. Limerence does not know we're not cave women anymore. Instead of raising little Neanderthals, we're quitting our jobs, moving across the country, giving up all our friends, taking up hobbies we used to think were stupid, and all for the sake of someone who turns out to be a complete psycho. Limerence is betraying us as individuals, sisters, for the greater good of the species. And I'm going to say it again. Limerence is an altered state that's designed to get you to mate. That's what it is, and limerence doesn't really care too much who it is you mate with. So we have to be smarter than our limerence. And that's not easy, sisters, because limerence feels so good. It does. It feels wonderful. It feels like love. It feels like having the goddess come right down into the bed with you. It feels like it cancels out all the heartache and all the failures and disappointments you've had in your whole life. It levels the debt the world owes you, because we know the world owes you one. It makes up for your rotten childhood. You can forgive everybody, even your mother, because you just won the happy ever after lottery. Nothing else is ever going to hurt you again, ever. If what? If you can just hold on to this person forever and ever? But sisters, that's the wrong if. The real if is if you can just keep producing the brain chemicals of limerence forever. And that's not possible unless you manage to keep falling in love over and over and over and over and over and over again, like every other 2 years. If you can manage to find your soulmate and life partner every 24 months, or if you can't do that, you can read a lesbian romance novel, one right after the other and another and another and another, because reading a romance novel or seeing a romantic film can deliver a little mini limerence drug cocktail that might tide you over. Romance novels and movies are to women what pornography is to men. Why? Because we are wired to perpetuate our gene pools. For men, this is by inseminating early and often, and for women, this is by falling in love long enough to conceive, bear, and wean. All right, so limerence is a chemically altered state of the brain, sisters. Now, what do you do if you drive to a party and get yourself into an altered state and then you need to go home? What do? You give your keys to a friend, don't you? Why do you do that? Because you know you're in an altered state and you cannot trust your judgment or your perceptions. And somebody, including you, could get hurt. That's right. And when your friends see you're not in your right mind because you've been drinking, they do not let you drive. Isn't that right? And this is new, sisters. This is a new cultural behavior because we've evolved in our understanding of alcohol and the way it works, haven't we? We've come out of denial about drunk driving. Thank the goddess. Because when I was young, we had not. But I think it's a wonderful thing that the protocol now is you do not let a friend drive drunk. And sex, sisters, is a vehicle. It's a vehicle that can have impact on others. So we want to be responsible. Now, there's some folks who don't believe it's possible to hurt others in consensual sexual relationships. That's not what Sister Carolyn's synapses tell her. My synapses tell me we are a damaged people. And we are especially damaged around our sexuality, and that, yes, we can hurt ourselves and each other very deeply when we're not able to take full responsibility for our sexuality. Now, some folks would say that that attitude is not being sex positive. Well, that's about as dumb as saying you're driving positive because you think driving's a good thing, so it doesn't matter if you're driving drunk or hallucinating or having a seizure or stroke. It's all good because, hey, I'm driving positive. All right, what if you're in limerence and you're starting to think about having sex with that person or moving in with them or co-signing a loan with them or marrying them? You ask your friends to help you out with your thinking. Have them get to know your new girlfriend. Ask them to tell you the truth. There's a thought. Ask them to tell you the truth. See if they think it's a good idea to have her move in with you or for you to fly over to Timbuktu to be with her. Ask for their advice and then listen to it. If all your friends more or less agree, you know what? They're probably right. And sisters, if you happen to be the friend that's being asked, don't be such a romance junkie yourself that you encourage her. Your friend might be trusting you to stay sober, emotionally sober. She's asking you to synapse. Don't be so happy to see her in love, finally, that you disconnect your brain, too. Don't be so sex positive you let her drive drunk. Break it down, sisters. Break it down. So we've talked about these two L words, love and limerence. And love is too pie in the sky, moon in June, vague to be helpful. And limerence is too clinical to give us much hope. So what are we going to do? We're going to respect ourselves, sisters. We're going to respect our biology. We're going to respect that it is powerful. We're going to respect each other. We're going to respect our histories. We're going to be specific about what we're feeling when we say we love someone so we can be responsible. I'm going to say that again so you can wire these together. We're going to be specific with our emotions and our words around our emotions so that we can be responsible to each other and to ourselves. We're going to get a second opinion and a designated driver when we're in limerence so we don't run our lives off the road. So spell it out with me, sisters. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. What's that spell? Respect. That's right, R-E-S-P-C-T. Find out what it means to me and you and to the sisterhood. Blessed be.
Playwright Carolyn Gage. Her plays and sermons can be found on the website carolyngage.weebly.com. For more about Wings, email wings@wings.org or visit facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service. Thank you.
Welcome to Film at 11 here on Community Radio KBOO Portland. Leading off today is Jeff Godsoe, who from Los Angeles regales us with observations on the myth and the music of Mysterious Island.
The name Ray Harryhausen looms large in the world of special effects and to all lovers of classic fantasy and sci-fi films. From The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms in 1953 to Clash of the Titans in 1981, if there was a memorable creature wreaking havoc on screen, it was probably created by Ray Harryhausen. It was Harryhausen who perfected the blend of rear projection with stop-motion model animation, a technique that he originally called dynamation. And in the golden age of special effects,